from WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be.
When country music icon Merle Haggard released The Fight Inside of Me in 1970 and Okie from Muskogee a year earlier, he tapped into a huge unfolding trend in America as white male voters, long open to Democrats, left that party in droves to become, by the 1980s, Reagan Republicans. Well, this year, old Merle, who was there for Reagan and there for George W. Bush, is singing out for Hillary Clinton. Question is Merle Haggard once again the tip of a trend? This hour On Point, we'll ask Merle Haggard what's up with his politics, and we'll look more broadly at where the white American male voter may be headed in 08. You can join the conversation. In a time of war and economic inequality and insecurity, are the white guys who swung to Reagan Republicanism ready to swing back to the Democratic Party or not? And can the Democrats or the GOP win without them? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We'll be hearing from Merle Haggard later in the hour. But first today, we're joined, and happy to be so, from Washington by David Paul Kuhn. He's senior political writer for the online political journal Politico.com and author of the new book that's getting a lot of buzz, The Neglected Voter, White Men and the Democratic Dilemma. David Paul Kuhn, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is our own white male voter, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Jack, good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Mr. Kuhn.
All right. David, Jack, we're going to have Merle himself here a little later in the show. But David Paul Kuhn, I want to come first to you because you're thinking a lot about white male voters in this country lately. Are they going somewhere new, and where have they just been?
Well, they've been with the Republican Party, and of course that began in the early 50s to some extent, most potently in the late 60s, and then firmly by Ronald Reagan, as you mentioned. So they've been with the Republican Party. They're the reason behind the Republican dominance of presidential politics in the last quarter century. And of course, they are to some extent up for grabs, to some extent, the independent white males, and more independents are white males than, for example, white women. So they are open to a Democratic appeal, and of course, that does not mean that they will move toward the Democratic Party. That simply means that the Democrats have opportunities. Of course, when one ends one relationship, that doesn't mean they're going to jump right into a new girlfriend. It could mean that they'll go single for a while. So as much as they have had issues with the Republican Party, and to be sure, they had some issues with George W. Bush in 2004, the Democratic Party has seemed like an unattractive alternative for so long that it's nearly become visceral.
Visceral, but of course the world changes. Everything changes in time. Take us back, David, to what it was that turned their standing. This group has been kind of, you know, it's so broad, I don't even know how to talk about it as one group. Nevertheless, as an element of voting dynamic, it's been seen as kind of Republican for a long time now. People may not remember when things were otherwise. What was that moment of flux that maybe Merle Haggard was singing to and partly promoting all the way back in 70?
Well, there's no doubt that Merle Haggard did touch on something very deep with these men, and so did, by the 80s, Bruce Springsteen and other musicians. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the trend is unmistakable. The facts are clear. If you look at the last quarter century between Harry Truman and George W. Bush, and you look at the lower third income bracket, white women hardly shifted in between the Democrats and Republicans. 25% of white men left the Democratic Party. So that means 25% of the white working class male left the Democratic Party, left the party of FDR, left the quote-unquote Working People's Party. In the middle class, 15-16% of white women left the Democratic Party. Twice that amount left among white men. So the problem is real. And so this moment when they left, well, it wasn't particularly any one moment, but certainly the anti-war movement. Certainly in the Deep South, in Mississippi, for example, civil rights had a great deal to do with it. Certainly racism was a driving factor in the Deep South. The problem is that, like, the left, the sort of liberal Democrats came to believe, especially that which rose after 1972, they came to believe that simply because some white men were racist or some white men were sexist, that was the reason they were leaving the Democratic Party. The problem was that was too easy. That was, in some sense, able to make the average Democrat feel good about losing presidential elections, but it not only was inaccurate, it was bad politics.
So we'll let Merle Haggard speak for himself in a few minutes, but how do you interpret, if he's on to something here, he's got good antenna, or maybe he just is representative of part of this country, how do you interpret the fact that someone like him might be looking the other way now, even putting his arm around the candidacy of Hillary Clinton?
I don't want to make too much of any one voter, even Merle Haggard. Mm-hmm. It's certainly, and a point you made that it's almost absurd to talk about any large voting bloc. That's true, but we do this with African Americans. We do this with women. So we certainly should do this with white men. They, of course, are less than, they're a smaller voting bloc than women, for example. But there's still more than a third of every American vote, of every presidential election. That's stunning. They're 36% of the last presidential election. So you simply can't ignore them. To some extent, Merle Haggard is like Jim Webb. Jim Webb was a Reagan Democrat.
The Virginia senator who came in 2006.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And the Virginia senator who came in 2006 in part because he made significant inroads with white men in that election. That was more the case in Montana. But in other words, the Democrats who won these key Senate races were able to do that because these were a certain type of candidate that made inroads with the white male electorate in their state. John Tester in Montana is a better example.
Crew cut John Tester, yeah.
So the problem is, who's a farmer for your listeners, who mm-hmm. has a stern mm-hmm. stance on immigration, and, sports a flat top haircut, baggy jeans. Mm-hmm. And I want to emphasize that it's not that these men are, they're going to simply go to the Democratic Party, but there's certainly, the Republicans have made a lot of mistakes. Almost every fact of the present favors the Democratic Party. The question is that's, and to some extent, been the case before. In 2004, the Democrats, issues from economics to healthcare, American voters trusted the Democratic Party. They simply were losing on the national security issue. Now, that issue has shifted to some extent, but I emphasize that with every fact of the present favoring the Democratic Party, presidential elections are at their core a contest between two characters. So the question is, whoever the Democrats nominate, that looks like it's going to be Hillary Clinton, and the Republican nominee, that's a little less clear. That's going to be a contest to sort of not only have trust in the platform beneath the politician, but also the principles beneath that politician. And to be sure, these men, if you look at exit polling, white men more than any other electorate vote based on character. And so they want to believe their candidate has moral absolutes. They're unchangeable. And that is extremely important when you look at a candidate like Hillary Clinton, because she has had this difficult hurdle of both being maintaining sort of true to her, if I dare say grit, true to her principles mm-hmm. while dealing with the war in Iraq. So we're all watching. I just want to emphasize that however mm-hmm. these men go in 2008 towards, for example, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee,
yep.
She comes into this election with the same burdens as John Kerry or Al Gore. So when one looks at Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton in this election, one's an African-American, one's a woman, it's easy to say, these men, if 32% only support the Democrats, that they did it because one was an African-American or one was a woman. Well, that's what they did in 1984 with Walter Mondale. So
you're basically saying they can't win without the white vote. There's another view out there, Tom Schaller in Salon, raising the question, could 2008 be the year the Democrats finally admit an old sweetheart is never coming back and stop pandering to the white male voter? His headline is "So Long, White Boy." What do you say to that?
Well, I mean, I find that a bit absurd. They have not pandered to the white male for a long time. In fact, they've done everything to sort of dissuade him, to make him feel like liberal culture has made him feel like the bigoted Archie Bunker, as I say, from All in the Family. They've reduced him to sort of a stereotype, ironically. First of all, they haven't pandered to him. And second of all, what do you do with sort of facts? You can either ignore them or you can try to deal with them and reconcile yourself with those facts. Mm. The very voters who left the Democratic Party and took Democrats' majority with them are middle-class and working-class white men, overwhelmingly. And you know what? Those women who left, they share similar outlooks.
Yep. Hold the thought. Jack Beattie, yeah. I want to come to you here. Do you see the white guys, loosening up in that Republican lock, maybe coming over to Democrats this time, Jack? Or can you even think of this piece of the electorate as a white males? I mean, does it make sense as a phrase to you?
Well, it's almost like the sea. I mean, it's very hard to. It's almost like the weather rather than a group. But you know, the what strikes me is the context here of economic insecurity. Mr. Kuhn tells us that men's earnings in 2005 were lower than their earnings in 1973, adjusted for inflation. This economic insecurity, you know, is the context, I think, of this movement to the Republican Party. And you say, well, what have the Democrats done for men in regard to this? Well, under Carter, they got trucking deregulation. I was a truck driver. I know what that meant. It's meant about 350,000 people lost their job. They got airline deregulation, big trouble in the airline. They got Paul Volcker and the massive recession in the Middle West, the Rust Belt. Under Clinton, they got NAFTA. They got the normalization of trade with China. They got the WTO. Today, with the Democrats, what do they have? They have, looking for the Hispanic vote, they're talking about, amnesty for illegal aliens, 10 million or so in the country, all of whom are potential competitors for lower-class white men. Meanwhile, what haven't they got? They haven't got national health insurance. They haven't got wage insurance. And they haven't got trade restrictions on social dumping. So,
Jack, hold that thought. We'll come back and hear from you guys and from Merle Haggard. We're talking about the Merle Haggard effect. White men left the Democratic Party in droves. Are they going back ever? Merle is. We'll talk to him. 800-423-TALK is our number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Mama praying for a better way of life, but I don't recall a change of any size, just a little loss of courage as their age began to show, and more sadness in my mama's hungry.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP, the Democrats, and where white male voters may be headed in 08. Merle Haggard is making some new choices. Country icon. We'll talk to him in a minute. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Are white men en masse ever going back to the Democratic Party? White male voters, let's hear it. Merle Haggard's thrown his cowboy hat in for Hillary Clinton and walked off the Republican ranch. How about you? What's made the GOP a magnet for white men for 30 years now? Is it still? Has the GOP let down Merle Haggard's men? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And let's hear it from the callers. Charles is calling from Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. Charles, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a 30-year-old white male voter. I've been a solid Republican for all of my voting life. And it really believed in the core principles of small government, and if you work hard, you can elevate yourself through the social strata. But
yep.
You know, over the past few years, those principles have been betrayed, especially by the Bush administration, because of their very pro-business, anti-worker stance, his inability to acknowledge the environmental crisis that we're going through now, and it just doesn't make any sense to vote Republican anymore for me.
So you don't like it, and you like it enough that you're shifting boxes on the ballot?
Oh, definitely. I mean, whether it's Hillary or Barack Obama, it doesn't matter. I'll vote Democrat for sure in 08.
30 years old, GOP going the other way this time. Charles, thanks very much. Let's get a call from Nashville, Tennessee. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm 50, and I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I just wonder, as far as the initial shift away from the Democrats, it seems like that people voted for populist candidates, and then once their circumstances were improved, they kind of became selfish, and it's like, I don't need that anymore. I'm going to go Republican, and I don't need the protection of these populist candidates anymore. I just wonder if that was kind of maybe economics was the initial shift.
But Jim, wasn't Ronald Reagan a populist candidate in a way? He certainly reached out effectively to guys like, let's say, Merle Haggard.
Well, I perceive populist candidates more as populist in terms of economic things and improving people's economic circumstances and their opportunity, as opposed to, say, more of these social type issues.
Yeah.
I just wonder if economics is the main driving force.
Let us pick it up. Jack Beatty, what about it? A couple different kinds of populism have been at work here. And Jim, in a way, points to both, but wonders if it wasn't economics at bottom.
Yeah, I mean, cultural populism, of course, is what Mr. Kuhn talks about, and which the Republicans have really commanded, sort of signaling to the insecurities of the white male that, you know, they're the party of strength, that they're the party of patriotism, and so on. But, you know, on this question of economic populism, Tip O'Neill had this outlook. He said, you know, here we've had a Democratic Party, of course, he's partisan, that essentially launched the American middle class through collective bargaining, through the GI Bill, all the great, you know, New Deal programs. And they got to a certain point and they said, well, we've made it and now we're going to vote Republican. And he said, you know, isn't this great? This is mobility. The Democratic Party has made things so good for a lot of working people that they can vote Republican. And so that was Tip O'Neill's analysis, which is the same as our callers.
David Paul Kuhn, what about it? Economics or cultural populism, the bigger factor in your analysis?
I think the caller's point is important, and it's one to really think about. But I would emphasize that by the late 1960s, I would emphasize this. Altruism is beneath few votes. Most people vote their interests. So in other words, it's when women or minorities are voting for the Democratic Party, they're not simply voting for, they're voting their interests. They're voting their not only their tax interests, they're voting their cultural interests, and they're certainly, if you take an issue like affirmative action, they're voting their literal employment interests. So by the late 1960s, a few things start happening. It's most potently by the 80s. If you had Sweeney on here, the head of the AFL-CIO, he would say that the Democrats stopped standing up for unions, and he would tell you that the Democrats stopped actually taking on the issues that would appeal to these men still on sort of an economic level. Two, I would say that it's clear there's no mistaking the fact that the Democratic Party, through FDR and others, helped lift what FDR called the forgotten man, sort of the average working man, which was mainly the average white guy, up into the middle class. You know, of course, so did Scheer, the economic rise of, you know, the American nation.
Sure.
But what's important there is it's that white men came to believe not only did Democrats not represent their economic interests anymore as they put forward programs that helped everybody but white men. Again, I hate to dwell too much on affirmative action, but it's such an iconic example of this. Two, it's that these men, cultural populism matters. It's not simply that these men came to feel sort of I hate to take on Thomas Frank, but I have to say, it's not that there was some working class guy in Kansas who's like, you know, was aware of his economic tax interests, and suddenly someone flashed the word abortion in front of him. He's like, oh, I'm going to vote Republican.
That's the who people lost Kansas thesis. Yep.
People define their interests much broader than economic. And certainly if we were in a depression and people were starving, then they would define their interests in purely economic terms. But this is the first world country. So you have to go beyond economics to understand the motivations behind a presidential vote. And for these white guys, it wasn't simply that when you, example, take the national security issue, it wasn't simply that they were voting their out of sort of a weak standpoint. They honestly did believe many more of them served. For example, 3 in 4 of those who have died in Afghanistan and Iraq today are white boys. I use the word boys loosely, late teens, early 20s.
So what? Of course, huge sacrifice, but politically, what does that mean?
What it means is that national security is not only literally part of a wide white male culture, but it's also for many of those who don't serve, they have come to believe, especially those that have come near the bottom that John Updike talks about in his novels.
Yeah.
They have come to believe that, you know, if you are not strong, other people will pounce. They do believe in peace through strength. They're not warmongers, but a great deal of them have had to deal with rough situations and sort of a brutal side of the human ego. And so when they deal with this, they have to be realists about strength and jerks.
Hold the thought. I want to go from Updike to a truck driver for a second, and we'll go right to Merle Haggard after. Paul, truck driver Paul's calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Paul, you're on the air, my friend.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tom, for taking my call. I listen to a lot of the talk shows, NPR. At times, I listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and there's a lot of different issues that people are discussing now. And as far as this, you know, the Republican men coming over to the Democratic Party. Mm. It's like this fellow was talking a second ago. You know, it goes right back to, you know, grassroots issues. Some of the things that back in the last election that was brought about, like same-sex marriage and different things like that, I noticed none of that, you know, is hardly being brought about today in this, you know, in these elections.
Are you on the move, Paul, from one party to another these days or not?
Well, I'm kind of undecided. I, as far as, you know, as far as voting, I noticed that the Democrats, you know, presidential candidates, they get more publicity in the mainstream media than the Democrats, you know, especially Hillary Clinton. And as far as I was listening to a talk show or watching a show the other day, Rudolph Giuliani made the statement as far as Hillary's experience goes. He made a statement that he didn't think she had a lot of experience other than being a senator as far as leading a business or leading a country or even a state as far as that goes.
Right, so you're still listening to Rudy, and sounds like you're still on the fence, and I hope you'll keep us posted, Paul, as all this rolls forward. I want to thank you for your call. We're going to have Merle Haggard in just 5 seconds here, but I want to play just a bit off his new album. It's called The Bluegrass Sessions. Here's part of a song titled Big City from Merle Haggard's new CD, The Bluegrass Sessions. The song, you'll hear it, hasn't got a lot of nice things to say about so-called Social Security or jobs that don't get folks very far in life.
I've been working every day since I was 20. I haven't got a lot to show for anything I've done. I know folks who never work, and they got plenty. I think it's time folks like you and me had some fun.
Big City from Merle Haggard's new CD, The Bluegrass Sessions. Merle Haggard joins us now from Northern California. Merle Haggard, it's a great pleasure to have you. Thanks very much for being here.
Hey, it's nice to be here.
You're the guy who wanted to put Ronald Reagan on Mount Rushmore, and now you're singing out for Hillary Clinton. You were with George W. Bush. What's going on with your view of American politics, the American nation, Merle?
Well, it's due for a change, I think, and she certainly has, I think, the best hand at the moment. Polls reveal that.
But what's the due for a change dynamic that you're looking at here? I mean, you were famous for saying, you know, Okies from Muskogee don't want to be bothered by hippies and all that anymore. If someone talks your country down, they get on the fighting side of you. That was years ago now. But then you got in deep with Reagan, and you were pretty darn supportive of George W. Bush. I mean, paint the picture for us, Merle Haggard, if you would, of what you see going on in the country that's pushing you in a different direction.
Well, things have changed. I think they've changed labels. It's like the record business, you know. It's times have changed around me. I'm still the same guy. I still believe in my country, but I don't believe in the same people, and I think that probably Hillary just has more to offer. I'm interested in the best for the country.
Well, there's, let's say, Rudy Giuliani. He stands tall, talks tough. Does that not have a Reagan-style appeal to you?
Yeah, it does, and he'd be my next choice, you know, but I just don't think he has the... I don't think he has the background that she has. I think, and how many people can, you know, what the gentleman learns during the day, he shares with his wife at night, and she went through 8 years of that. I just don't understand how anybody can compare their past with hers.
So Hillary Clinton, having been at President Bill Clinton's elbow, and that looks like pretty good going to school to you?
I'd say so.
Is it an economic complaint you've got about the status quo, Merle Haggard, or a cultural complaint? Which?
I just think that our minds are somewhere else, some other country, and our eyes should be on the nation, and you know, let's clean up our own front yard, let's take care of the highways and the bridges and let's come within the side, inside the border. Hardly anybody is talking about that. Everybody's talking about Iraq or Iraq or Iraq or whatever they call it. But I like to hear somebody talk about America and what's going to happen inside the borders of America, and the borders are another issue.
And do you think that Democrats are going to appeal to a wider swath of voters like you, to more guys who may share your view of the world? Or, you know, with same-sex marriage and abortion issues and all of that, is that still off-putting, perhaps, to the audience you sing for?
Well, it could be. I could be, biting myself in the leg here, but I don't know. I think that those issues are spiritual issues. I don't know the answers to those things, and I don't think anybody else does. We have opinions, but I'm more interested in what we're going to do about certain issues having to do with the infrastructure of this country and how we're going to get ourselves some jobs back in the country. What about the companies that are leaving the United States and going to Canada and Mexico? Are we going to get some of that back?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with Merle Haggard. This is On Point. Merle Haggard, do you think the Republicans have not handled those issues in the right way, or will not?
Well, they haven't talked about them much. It's been, the border has been, I haven't heard the president say much about that at all. And, he being from Texas looked like he'd be right on top of that issue.
Well, he said he wanted immigration reform, and that didn't happen. What about the fact that Hillary Clinton is obviously not male? Does that matter to you? Do you think it matters to your audience?
You know, people could take me wrong here. I'm not necessarily for her, but I think the country is for her. And her being a female is going to be interesting. But the most interesting thing about her is Bill, to me. I mean, I just believe that he's probably the number one politician in the world.
And he'll be there at her side, and that's good enough for you.
Well, it certainly adds a lot to the game.
You know, Merle, on your new album, The Bluegrass Sessions, you ask, what happened is the name of one of your songs. What happened? Where did America go? Everything Walmart all the time, no more mom and pop, five and dimes. What do you think happened? And is it just nostalgia to think things are going to be, you've got, Andy and Barney Fife in this song. Are we ever going back to Andy and Barney Fife?
You can go over to the old channel, and watch all that, but no, we're not going back. And I just feel like that a lot of what we're fighting for is slipping away beneath our feet, and without much notice. And it's my question: do people realize that? I mean, have they been from coast to coast many times, and have they seen the deterioration of America? And that again, America is my interest.
Do you think the compass is turning? When you sang "Fight Inside of Me" and "Okie from Muskogee," there was a big turn coming away from Democrats toward Republicans. Do you feel it building the other way now, or is it just you, Merle?
I think it's going to be the biggest landslide in history. That's just what I predict. I'm not saying I'm for or against it. I'm just saying I think that's what's going to happen. I think the lady's going to take it.
A Democrat, a woman, Hillary Clinton, biggest landslide in history.
Yep. That's the way I see it. I don't know. I mean, you can just mark them off one by one, but who's going to, unless they pull a rabbit out of the hat or something between now and next year, I just can't see anybody really giving her much competition.
Well, there it is. Merle Haggard, you're on the record now, and we appreciate your being with us. The new CD is The Bluegrass Sessions. Merle Haggard, thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely.
Merle Haggard joining us there from Northern California. David Paul Kuhn, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We're talking about white, male, American voters and the 08 election. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Holding things together ain't no easy thing to do when it comes to raising children. It's a job
it's meant for two. I'll just please believe me, I can't go on and on holding things together with you gone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP, the Democrats, and where white male voters may be headed in 08. In the 80s, they left the Democratic Party in droves. Are they going back ever? Merle Haggard thinks so. Do you? This year, Merle Haggard added a new song to his playlist on his concert tour. The song's called Hillary, and in it, Haggard says she's the right lady and her husband's a pro.
8 years in the White House with the know-how we need. When you walk with a leader, you learn how to lead. And who kept her head high when it could have been down? And who ran the show when the scandal hit town? This country needs to be honest. Our changes need to be large. What we need is a big switch of gender. Let's put a woman in charge.
Merle Haggard sang Okie from Muskogee. Now he's got a new tune, a different tune. It's called Hillary. Who would have thunk it? You can join the conversation. Has the GOP let down Merle Haggard's men? Is the truck-driving, hard-working, white American male ready for a political change? Do the Democrats know how to talk to white male voters anymore? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. David Paul Kuhn is with us. His new book is The Neglected Voter, White Men and the Democratic Dilemma. Jack Beatty is with us as well. Let's go to Jan in North Charleston, South Carolina. Hi, Jan. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been in the South a long time, and I work with farmers all over the South in California.
Mm-hmm.
It's been real interesting to see the sea change that's going on. We've lost a bunch of textile jobs here. And farmers that under the Reagan program of freedom to farm, that means they don't farm, and it's killing the small towns down here. But what I'm hearing is people are starting to listen to what Gore's message was in 2000, which is we need to get the green economy here. We need to grow our own fuels. He predicted that the Japanese would develop the hybrid drive train if we didn't invest in it, and
mm-hmm.
that's what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to, the Democrats got to quit talking about education, because all that's happening is that the jobs are being outsourced, like computer programs and that kind of things. We need industry in America for the new green economy.
Well, so you say, Jan, and a lot of people, but what about all those guys, maybe white guys, listening to Rush Limbaugh, listening to a different tune?
What the farmers are telling me is they will vote for anybody who's for these new industries, but they don't want Archer Daniel Midlands and Exxon to run it. They want to be the investors. They want to own it in farmer co-ops. They want a fair playing field.
There's the word from South Carolina. Jan, we've got it. We thank you for your call. Let's get another right here from New London, Connecticut. And Mukel. Mukel, you're on the air.
Yes. Happen to be African-American,
mm-hmm.
and I'm listening to your program. I don't think the situation is neither black or white. It's more of a situation of demagoguery. You have perhaps the most corrupt and incompetent neocons in the White House who are running the show down in Washington now. And I really believe it's not a matter of white or black. It's a matter of who's being used. Just look at October's issue of Forbes magazine and Jeffrey Sachs' article of the 400 richest people in America and how America has been neglected over the years. I'll just take my response off the air.
Mukel, thank you very much. David Paul Kuhn, Mukel's African-American. He says, you know, basically it's not race, it's class. And demagoguery. Will class explain what's happened and what may happen this time?
Well, there's been a lot said that's so interesting, and I really appreciate Merle Haggard coming on. That line, "The lady is going to take it," should be its own song. That was amazing. What
Maybe.
A quote.
Maybe.
Okay, as for that last point on demagoguery, I do think, and I think Merle Haggard would agree with this, actually. I think that there is a sense among men, black or white or Hispanic, that if one uses strength the wrong way, if one in using their strength actually appears weaker, and then there's almost a bluff to that, and a greater weakness that comes out of that, and a disappointment and a disbelief in that person as a leader. So if one is a braggart, says like they're the greatest quarterback, and then they play their first game and, you know, they simply can't get the job done, there's nothing worse in the male psyche.
Or the greatest war leader, for example.
Or the great, well, obviously that's what I mean. Mm-hmm. And so, because to go back to the football analogy, it's the touchdowns that count. And I'm not trying, you know, I don't use that metaphor to say, to talk in some simplistic way, but mm-hmm. if this is important and profound. So I do think that there is something to be said among men for whether, for disappointment about how the president may have taken us so deep into what one could argue is a bad war or a mismanaged war. And that has certainly, I've noticed, left these men somewhat estranged from the Republican Party. I mean, the genesis for this book was in my drive across the United States, talking to hundreds and hundreds of these men from everywhere, you know, from the Heartland to New Orleans to the Northwest. So in doing that, I even at the time, I saw a disappointment with the current president. I saw an unease with the war in Iraq. But they still weren't ready to sort of move to the Democratic Party. I do think what could happen in 2008, as Merle Haggard alluded to, is that you could have a protest vote like 2006. And I remind everyone, like 1976, I don't think if it was for Watergate, Jimmy Carter would have ever been president. So you, that's possible, but that's not systemic reform. That's not the systemic reform that builds a new majority. The
Democrats, or not a sea change, necessarily.
It's not a sea change, mm-hmm. exactly, because, of course, the Democrats haven't had a majority for a quarter century. So when we talk about white men, it's important a few things. One is that they're often talked about in extremes, either as filthy rich or as like the or as like a bigot. And so it's important to remember that like there's tens of millions of regular guys in between that. Two is on issues like same-sex marriage, for example, that I think you brought up. Mm. It's actually not white men that have the biggest issue with that. It's African-American women and Latino women, if you look at the polling.
Interesting.
So there's also a lot of misconceptions of this electorate. And I would just like to add that there was a really amazing line in that song you played by Merle Haggard that I talk about in my book. There was a line of something like, he's singing about Hillary, and he said, she kept her head high when it should have been down.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I believe he's talking about the Monica Lewinsky scandal and the sex scandals prior to Monica.
Mm-hmm.
What's so powerful about that, and I have an article coming out about this in the next couple of days, and I certainly write about this in my book, is that in 1992, when Hillary first defended her husband on national television against the sex scandal,
right,
against his indiscretions, bear with me for 1 minute here, she said, I'm not Tammy Wynette mm-hmm. standing by my man. I remember that quote so vividly, and it was such the wrong move because, of course, to millions of American women, they take pride in that they stood by their man. And I'll tell you, to millions more American men who are terrified of making a mistake of losing their families if they lose their job, losing their wives' love, their ability to support their children, they admire any woman who sticks by their man for better and for worse. In other words, if
your
Hillary
point is she did when the scandal
she did.
Hit town.
So she should champion the very thing she distanced herself from, because this is what I'm getting at. Americans need, for male presidents, they've always needed man-making myths. They've always needed a myth at which this person became a man. Kennedy had PT-109.
Yeah.
Andrew Jackson had New Orleans. Hillary Clinton doesn't have to live up to the same masculine sort of preconceptions, but what she has is a great story that we all live through. And so she should actually champion that she outlasted all of her detractors. She kept her head up high. She stood by her husband. And that is
maybe so,
testifies
maybe so.
To grit
yeah,
and to strength.
The details a little on the icky side there, not exactly Rushmorean. But Jack Beattie, I don't want to let Mukel's point go about race and class. You know, African-American fellow citizen says, it's not race anymore. It's class. Now, we know at one time, Jack, race had a lot to do with it. LBJ, you know, he's with Bill Moyers, signs the civil rights legislation and says, we've lost the South, Bill. What about now?
Right. You know, we have a language for race in this country. We don't have one for class. Class is, many people think it doesn't exist in America. Class is something that happens in Europe. We've transcended that, and the idea of fixity, of no mobility, that also is anathema to American self-regard. But the fact is that we have become a less mobile society. I've seen figures now that we are less mobile than Britain, where people are marked off according to their accents. So class issues are really, it seems to me, coming to the fore. And the language to talk about these things, well, we'll have to see how the Democrats adapt to it. They speak of the middle class, or they speak of working families,
right.
Or they try to avoid working class. And yet, you know, in polls, I don't say a majority, but a very large portion of Americans identify themselves as working class. And so it may be that the economic insecurity of turbo capitalism is finally going to make issues of class, and that is to say economic justice throughout the society, salient.
Let's go to Ken in Nevada, Missouri. Ken, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say I've been a Democrat all my life, and this is the first time I'm jumping over to the Republicans.
You're going the other way. Who's pulling you over, Ken?
Actually, Ron Paul's the one that's pulling me over. I like his approach. I like his frankness. I like the way he comes out, and I think he'll be a fighter in the long run.
Ron Paul, I mean, of all the Republicans, he could hardly be further from what's seen as the front runners there. So is it a throwaway vote? Is it worth that, Ken?
Well, I tell you what, I drive coast to coast, and I go through areas with my semi that a lot of people don't see, and you sure see a lot of people putting out support for Ron Paul out in their front yards, out in their cornfields, over bridges. I mean, it just goes from California all the way over to Pennsylvania.
Ken, we've got it, and you may not be in the Democrat camp this time, but I guess you're sure not where Giuliani or Mitt Romney would want to see you there. Let's get a call from Jeff in Williamsburg, Virginia. Jeff, you're on the air.
Thank you. The reference to what your last caller just said, yeah, if Ron Paul was a viable possibility, I might vote for him, but I don't think the Republican establishment is going to let him anywhere near the nomination. The reason I called, though, was I'm probably part of the demographic about what you're talking today. I'm a 54-year-old white male. Wore a blue uniform and a huge badge for 30 years. I am independent, but I've historically voted mostly Republican, and I've identified most frequently with self-reliance and those kind of ideas rather than some of the other conservative values they push.
Self-reliance? So how do you see it now?
I'm furious with the Republican Party. A lot of it is with what the current administration has done. From the start, this whole deal with Iraq, I understand going into Afghanistan. I never, ever saw Iraq, and I felt from the moment the conversation about Iraq was initiated from Washington, it was all a bald-faced lie. And I still think that, but moreover, the general attitude within the Republican Party strikes me as almost being reactionary. These people are intractable just for the sake of being intractable.
What about the Democrats? Are they singing a tune you can feel comfortable with?
At least they're open to discussing things, to discuss possibilities, to discuss change. One of the things that set me off here in Virginia, and Virginia is a very conservative state, and I think it was pandering to the right, specifically to the religious right, of which I used to be a part. But the Republicans in the General Assembly here sponsored an amendment to our state constitution, specifically put into the state Bill of Rights, and what they enshrined there in our Bill of Rights was that this Commonwealth, nor any political subdivision of the Commonwealth, is allowed to acknowledge same-sex marriage or any social or legal contract that is designed to acquire the benefits thereof, and whether or not you believe one way or the other about same-sex marriage, to put a non-right into the Bill of Rights of a state is just absolutely beyond me. And this is the
Jeff, we've got it. You're looking there as an offense to freedom rather than the detail of it, but just the freedom issue, and its heart has got you going, and we hear that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jeff, thanks very much for your call. We get one more here from John in Hamilton, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Pretty good. What do you know?
I am a former Republican. I describe myself as a Kevin Phillips disenfranchised Republican. Never in my wildest dreams did I dream that George W. Bush could drive me into the arms of Ted Kennedy, but he has succeeded.
And what's driving you? What's the fuel in that tank?
Well, number one is the war in Iraq. Afghanistan, yes. Iraq, it's a mistake. Bush would rather, I think, shoot rather than talk his way out of problems. I think we're building up to a war with Iran that we don't need and can't fight.
So when you hold your pen over that box in the 08 election, where are you going to put the X?
In all honesty, I'd like to see Bloomberg run.
And if he doesn't?
Probably not the Republicans.
So somebody on the Democratic side?
Anybody on the Democratic side?
Does it matter who at this point to you?
Well, I'd have a hard time pulling the lever for Hillary, but who knows?
Well, there it is. Up for grabs maybe this time. And, John, thanks very much for your call. David Paul Kuhnle, we've heard from a lot of people in this hour. Merle Haggard right at the heart of it. Is the change coming? Or when all the, you know, sound and fury settles, do you think the white male center of gravity still stays GOP?
Well, that was a fascinating caller, that gentleman who was an independent who had been leaning Republican, because that is, like, the fundamental demographic that has made Republican presidents. You know, what's fascinating when you listen to these guys, and I just love it. I could do this all day, just listening to them call in. I do think that last caller, for example, is indicative to some extent. In other words, national security above all and this feeling on Iraq has left Democrats with this amazing opening. And I say amazing just simply because it's extraordinary to see Democrats have a national security opening since Vietnam has haunted them for so long. And we'll see how they handle that. You know, when we look at what happens, I see a... There's no doubt in my mind, both with polling and anecdotally, that especially white male independents, who again have made Republican presidents, are unhappy with the Republican Party for many different reasons. And some of your callers alluded to several of them. Now, the question is, will they, to some extent, as one of your callers certainly said, vote Democratic simply because they are so angry at sort of being dishonoring their support? Well, we'll see about that, and it depends on who the Democrats nominate. Hillary Clinton's problems are not necessarily if she wins a nomination, because she is a woman. Of course, white men have been nominated by the Democratic Party for a long time, and they've had their problems too. So the real question is if Hillary Clinton, for example, wins the nomination, will she, you know, take a look at the voters who the Democrats lost, the very voters who took away the Democratic majority? Will she include them in
and speak to them? And
America?
With that, we're out of time. David Paul Kuhn, the new book is The Neglected Voter. Thanks for being with us. And Jack Beatty, looks wide open to me. Thanks to both of you. We'll go out with Merle Haggard. What happened? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Everything Walmart all the time. No more mama, pop, five, and dime. What happened? Where did America go? Where did America go?